Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on today's culture, but didn't know where to begin? Have you struggled to find a biblical approach to the topic? Well, Concordia University, Wisconsin has an exciting, free, online course entitled Catechristen. It's taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, Dr. Gregory Schultz. Find out more about this free online course for professional church workers and lay people by clicking the Catechristen logo at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. New York Times recently had a story on the GOP divide between the populist and the country club Republicans. Something was missing, though, and is something rather important. The subtleties are not difficult to catch. Joining us to talk about media coverage of religion and the GOP wars, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion for the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, glad to be here.
So what is it that the New York Times has missed when it comes to this war among Republicans?
Well, what was really stunning to me about that article was that there was no discussion in it at all of the role of either religious issues or moral issues or conflicts about that. Now, flashback just a month or two, you and I were talking about the fact that the press was absolutely convinced that Donald Trump owned the evangelicals, right? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I was sitting here trying to think of how to explain this to our listeners. So I want to just run a series of, I want them to picture in their minds. Right now, the evangelical vote is split pretty severely. So look at it this way. Who are Donald Trump's evangelicals? That's question number one. Question number two, who are Ted Cruz's evangelicals? And there are a lot of them. Who are Senator Rubio's evangelicals? And he says he's after the Billy Graham evangelicals. And he just, this past week, in a move that I thought probably deserved more press attention than it got, Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback agreed to join Rubio's kind of advisory team on religion, which I thought was kind of an interesting. And also, who are Jeb Bush's evangelicals? Now, if you stop and think in your mind, like, what are the kinds of issues that might separate those evangelicals one from another, why they might lean toward one candidate more than another, we're going to find a lot out here in a couple of days when Donald Trump speaks at Liberty University, a scene that is almost too bizarre, you know, to imagine in my mind. But that's where we are right now. So you've got the fact that he was shown to have a lot of evangelicals who are very mad at America, and they're responding to a lot of his messages. But let me just put the question to you, for let you stand in for the listeners for a second. What do you think one of the main issues would be that would separate Donald Trump's evangelicals from, say, Rick Rubio's evangelicals?
Oh, golly, that's a very good question. Okay, I'm going to venture a guess, and that is not the fact that they self-identify as evangelicals, but how they practice their evangelicalism.
Well, I mean, that's one level. The statistics seem to indicate that Trump has people who are not evangelical leaders and they're not frequent churchgoers. World Magazine had some material about that, which showed that basically among evangelical leaders, among active evangelicals in positions of leadership, Trump was near the bottom of the list in the massive Republican pool at the beginning of the race. And that people like Bush and Rubio and Cruz were higher. I think, just to name that obvious point, wouldn't you assume that one of the biggest differences between Trump evangelicals and Rubio evangelicals would be their position on immigration?
Absolutely, yes.
So then you start looking, who are the people in evangelicalism that are, they want sensible immigration reform, but they are in no way anti-immigration. In fact, they're very pro-Latino ministry. They're building up strong support among evangelical Protestants who are Hispanic. You start thinking, who are those people? And one of the first things you begin thinking about is like, well, that describes the modern focus on the family crowd. That describes the entire leadership of the Southern Baptist Convention. Probably among the most vital Latino ministries in America are coming out of the Assemblies of God and other charismatic fields. So at that point, you begin to say, well, that's really interesting. I could not see how any of those people would be really excited about Donald Trump. And they're just probably not going to go that way. So then you get into more subtle questions. And this is where I begin to, then you get into the differences between Rubio and Cruz. It seems to me that Cruz's followers are more fervent, for lack of a better term. They're more conservative evangelicals, even perhaps accurately described as fundamentalists. And he has some people who have openly endorsed him. James Dobson, formerly Focus on the Family, would fall into that crowd. He has a tremendous base in Texas, obviously, and among Pentecostals in Texas. But look at it this way. When the race starts getting down to two or three people, can you see Ted Cruz's Latino Pentecostal evangelicals going to Rubio more smoothly than they would go to Trump?
Yes.
Yes. And could you see all of them feeling just as comfortable with, say, the ticket that I heard evangelicals talking about a year and a half ago, that their dream ticket was Bush Rubio?
I could see that.
So, you know, besides the fact that they're both out of Florida, but you'd have both halves of the Republican ticket speaking fluent Spanish, which would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it?
It'd be very interesting.
I mean, so to make a long story short, the Republicans are at war right now, probably more than ever, and a lot of it is over some extremely hot topics, which have religious overtones, but not a lot of religious content. And immigration and what to do with the current refugee crisis are right at the top of that list. But it was like this New York Times piece just totally forgot the entire battle over religious liberty, which the further you go into a White House race, the more important the Supreme Court always becomes. And I was reminded in the piece I wrote on this, Forget Religion, I was reminded of one of the most interesting pieces on this topic I ever read. It was back in 2003 in Atlantic Monthly. And as I admitted in the piece today, a lot of things may have changed related to this. But it was some data on the campaign between Bill Clinton and Bob Dole. And people working for Bill Clinton said that if they wanted to find the difference between strong Dole voters and strong Clinton voters, they found a set of five questions that separated those voters out with more accuracy than anything other than race as a factor. And those five questions: do you believe homosexuality is morally wrong? Have you ever personally looked at pornography? Would you look down on someone who had an affair while married? Do you believe sex before marriage is morally wrong? And the fifth question is religion very important in your life? And they found that the how people answered those five questions were the single best indicators of telling you whether they voted for Bob Dole or Bill Clinton. and I think listeners can probably guess which way the people answered the questions. And then you get into the fact that in race after race after race, we've had what some people refer to as the Pew gap, P-E-W gap, and that is that the more a person goes to church, the more likely they are to vote Republican. And another interesting factor behind that is the Republicans have a massive lead among white married couples. And the more children the couple has, the more likely they are to be Republican among whites, not among blacks and Latinos. But all of that says to me is that there remains that religion and moral issues remain at the kind of at the heart of our politics right now, whether we want to admit it or not. And I was just amazed that the New York Times wrote this entire piece on the warfare inside the Republican Party and didn't even mention any of the religion elements.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion and the GOP wars on this Thursday afternoon, January the 14th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion for the King's College in New York City, author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, I want you to reiterate something along the subject that we're discussing here, the media coverage of religion and these GOP wars. That Pew gap, just to make sure we rightly understand, often it's misunderstood as simply that Democrats tend to be more secular and Republicans tend to be more religious, but it's more fine-tuned than that. It really comes down to, doesn't it, whether they be Democrat or Republican, the gap really exists between whether or not that particular person frequents the pew.
Well, yeah, there's that factor. And then also there is a religious left. Part of the reality, though, is that the churches of the religious left are now statistically so much smaller than the churches of the religious right. There are way more Assemblies of God people than there are Episcopalians. There are way more Southern Baptists than there are people in the Presbyterian Church USA. There are way more people in the Churches of Christ than there are in the Disciples of Christ. You get into the fact that over and over, those denominations, the conservative denominations, may be struggling a little bit membership-wise, but they still are so much larger. And if you'll flash back to our conversations about the Pew Forum study that gave us all of that material about the religiously unaffiliated and the nuns, it mentioned, for example, that secular Americans, religiously unaffiliated Americans, and Americans who had no part of the church whatsoever, that coalition is now the largest identifiable group in the modern Democratic Party's coalition. Now, that's also because of their beliefs on social issues. Those secular people can actually form a coalition very easily with religious liberals because their positions on all of those hot-button sexuality and First Amendment issues are all the same. So the Pew Gap is simply a matter that it's a matter of statistics, but then when you get to the active churchgoers in America, the larger churches in terms of the number of people in the pew, like independent evangelical churches in America, those tend to be the more socially conservative churches, and thus the ones that, whether they like it or not, they have almost no choice except to vote for Republicans.
I'd like your thoughts on this, kind of in the more general sense of the Pew Gap, when it comes to either the divide between the kind of populist and country club GOPers, or the bigger gap between perhaps the GOP and the more progressive the Democrats. There is a morality on both sides. There's no doubt about it. Both sides have moral issues, especially when it comes to Republican and Democrats. That they hold with a religious fervor, whether they identify themselves as religious or not. There are rights and wrongs on both sides, aren't there?
Yeah, and there are very specific positions on these issues that they defend as being absolutely true. But once again, stop and think about it. Let's go back to the divide among Republicans. You went right by something. You talked about the division between populism and the country club. Well, if you say, let's say you went to the country club in Atlanta, Georgia, and you hung out with the very moneyed people that go there, and they're Republicans, do you think it's more likely that those people are Episcopalians and Presbyterians or Assemblies of God and Southern Baptist?
Well, I mean, I'm probably stereotyping, but the country club's going to go into the mainline category in my mind.
Correct. And pretty much the further north you go, the more true that is. So when you talk about establishment Republicans that are rejecting social conservatives, you think primarily in terms of California, you think of the Midwest, you think of the upper Northeast, and you think of the biggest cities in the Sun Belt. You think of Houston and Dallas, to where you would still have very powerful members of the old Republican establishment. And obviously, to some degree, the Bush family is a part of that, which made George W. Bush kind of a breakout figure in the sense that he identified as kind of more evangelical United Methodist, whereas his father was a pure country club Episcopalian. Have I ever told you the great story about George Herbert Walker Bush and the very embarrassing answer that he gave once when he was running for president? And he was asked, when he got shot down during World War II, and he's in the shark-infested waters in the Pacific Ocean, and a reporter asked him, while you were floating in the water, what did you think about? And Herbert Walker Bush, that great patrician figure, says, I thought about Barbara, meaning his wife. I thought about, my family. I thought about America. And I thought about God. And then there was a long pause. And having realized kind of in his mind, like, oh, my God, I just said the word God. And then he said, and the separation of church and state. That was in a great footnote in a piece on Herbert Walker Bush versus Bill Clinton, a piece in the First Things. It's one of the only footnotes I've ever read that made me like fall out of my chair laughing. But doesn't that sum up the Republican Country Club just about as great as you could ever want to?
Absolutely.
Or it's like they go to church, but they're just not comfortable with this being part of their persona. Dwight Eisenhower, it's very important that people believe in God, whichever one it is. That sort of a thing. I just love that anecdote, and that has always, for me, kind of symbolized those two different branches within the Republican Party. The kind of raise your hands in the air and shout hallelujah crowd versus the folk at the country club.
Now, I got to ask a couple questions to kind of wrap this up. First of all eyes quickly turn to Iowa. And how is this the reality, not just the perception, but the reality of the Pew Gap? How is it evidencing itself there?
It's crucial because of the caucus system, that you have to have people there on the ground who are organizing for you at the level of the caucuses. I thought it was fascinating that a day after writing a huge piece that doesn't even mention religion, religious liberty, anything like that, in the New York Times, the very next day there was a huge piece on the fact that Ted Cruz was making serious headway in Iowa because of the importance of his religious voters and the support among pastors at the grassroots level. I mean, honestly, where are the states that the Republican nomination is going to be settled this year? I mean, the huge blocks and where everybody's going to want to know if someone can put a coalition together. Religion is still going to be very important in Iowa. It's going to be very important in South Carolina. It's going to be very important in Texas. And it's going to be very important and more complex in Florida, where you have a massive amount of evangelical voters in Central Florida, in the Orlando area, in a corridor down there that everybody talks about as being the center of evangelical power in Florida. I just, you know, obviously the Pew gap is not going to vanish. It's going to change. We know there are more secular and unaffiliated young voters now than there used to be. There's a change in the population. But when you look at the dynamics of life in the Republican Party, I just don't see the religion factor going away.
One final question here, and this is just going to kind of call for you to, you know, think in the future a little bit. Read a piece yesterday from Pat Buchanan, and he was talking about the legal woes that Hillary Clinton faces with regard to her service as Secretary of State. And he was saying, look, there's a real possibility that the bottom could fall out of her campaign, whether she likes it or not. And that we actually are looking, at least for the time being, as a head-to-head between Donald Trump and, now his name escapes me, Bernie Sanders.
Feel the burn.
Okay. Now, whether you believe that to be unlikely or not, but if that were to occur, Terry, and we have the front runner there in the form of Donald Trump, and then the default front runner, if Hillary's campaign falls apart, of Bernie Sanders, can American evangelicals bring themselves to vote the Republican ticket if that's how it shapes up, either in the primaries or in the general?
Well, you know, I really don't know how to respond to that first, because I think the Clintons remain bulletproof at the level of the press. It would be interesting to see what the Democratic Party would do to get an alternative to Bernie in a brokered convention. But for however you want to picture it in your mind, the press, I don't think is going to take down a Clinton. They haven't done it before. I also don't think Trump can survive the Bible Belt. We're going to see, but I've seen quite a few articles making the valid point that Trump is going to have a lot of trouble getting past a 35-38% barrier in the Republican Party, especially when you hit the Bible Belt. So the issue is, at some point, who begins to consolidate on the other side and put together a coalition that hits 50, 55, 60, once people begin dropping out of the race and begin endorsing each other. And when you look at all that's been said, it brings up another point about the New York Times article. The New York Times article really tried to say that Trump Republicans and Cruz Republicans were almost identical. And that just strikes me as bizarre, almost like wishful thinking. I think the Cruz Republicans are going to end up being more like Barry Goldwater Republicans and have more to do with the party when push comes to shove than anything that Trump would do.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion for the King's College in New York. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon, January the 14th, Dr. Andrew Steinman will join us. We're going to talk about the dating of the Old Testament Exodus and therefore also the dating of the conquest of the Promised Land. Some Bible scholars say that it's off by about 100 years and couldn't have occurred that way. We'll answer that question after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.